Now entering Nerdist.com. Jackie Cation, Laurie Kilmartin. Jackie Cation, Laurie Kilmartin. It's the Jackie and Laurie Show. The Jackie and Laurie Show. It's the Jackie and Laurie Show. The Jackie and Laurie Show.
Hello.
And hello.
We have spent much of this day together. Your mythical friend Cheryl exists.
Yes.
I got
and
to meet
you guys,
her.
You stole her from me.
Well,
and now she won't talk to me.
You know what they say about love? You let it go. And then if it comes back, it was meant to be.
She calls me, Carmen's my new best friend.
Oh, right,
I'm
Morales.
Giving her things. Oh, my God.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Morales will steal a friend from you. That's what Carmen Morales is like. Holy smokes. So
we had a brunch, but then every time a topic came up, we were like, hey, easy, stop it. We're going to bring it up later.
Exactly. Don't save the gems. And then I forgot my notes. So here's what, don't you want this to happen? When you have a special, an hour long special on Netflix, someone to watch it with a pen in their hand?
Did you make notes on
Hannah Gadsby?
Andy Dick's. Oh, okay, yeah.
No, on Hannah Gadsby.
I know. I mean, on Andy Dick's special? Yeah,
on Andy Dick's.
Yeah.
If Andy Dick has a special, someone buy me a knife, a sharp, sharp knife, and stick me in a bathtub. Anyway.
So you watched Hannah's? Thank you. I watched it too. I've watched it twice.
You watched it twice, which is great. And at least three comics we know have said out loud, it's not really stand-up. And I have this to say, shut up, because stand-up it's amorphic. It changes.
Yes.
It certainly doesn't, you know, I'm all mad at punk rockers, you know, Jerry Seinfeld from 1979. And
right,
then with
right.
With a twisty one-liner joke at the end of it.
Right.
It isn't that. It's more storytelling, obviously.
Right.
Plenty of punchlines. It was 70 minutes long.
Yeah.
There was some angry, ranty stuff in the at probably every 20 minutes. It was probably 5 or 7 minutes of rant.
Yeah.
And but you know what? Stanhope, Bill Burr, Lenny Bruce, any number of dudes have ranted and raved. And it's been funny, as was hers.
Hers was great. What you just said reminded me, there has never been, I mean, when all the times we've seen white guys being angry about shit, and you're just like, especially with me, the worst one to me was Kinison. Like, dude, you have attractive women are talking
thrilling.
To you and you are revolting. You're physically right. disgusting to me. Why are you mad? But they, to me, what they have to be mad about is so trivial. And what women have to be mad about is so fucking huge. And there isn't, and Hannah Gadsby isn't this either, a woman who was just up there in a trench coat ranting in a way that Hicks did.
Yeah.
I mean, he had great jokes too.
Right.
But
as do the women who rant at all. At all.
Yes, yeah, yeah. But with allowed to have that fury with the audience not being absolutely petrified of that
either
person.
Either terrified or super judgmental, which comes from fear.
I don't know if there's a... Maybe... what's his name? He used to write for Pryor. I was trying to think of a black comic that was like that. Paul Mooney might be that for
black men.
For a black comic. But I haven't seen him in a long time.
I haven't seen a black woman. I mean, I've seen some angry, it's angrier, but it's usually silly, you know?
Yes.
It's usually.
And Chappelle
women
also, Chappelle's personality softens a lot of stuff, you know?
Right.
I mean, he's talking about, you know, Tillman in that special, but it's still soft, you know? And maybe that's what stand-up should be, because you're serving it to people and you want them to laugh. But it's allowed to be this ranting Columbine killer trench coat guy on stage.
Did you have a favorite joke? Because I kind of had a favorite premise. Kyle, did you end up seeing it yet? The Hannah Gadsby thing?
Oh, okay.
I would not have seen it if I had not been told to see it hundreds of times by absolutely fucking everyone in front of me. And just you. And other people. And it also kind of made me watch it because there was like, people were like, it's too sad sack. There's abuse issues. And you're like, I have an abuse joke on Horcrux.
Right. Half the reason comics watch specials is to make sure they don't bump into your shit. Wait a minute. Right. She's talking about rape. Hold on.
And people are like, it's not comedy. It's poignant, or it's got too much seriousness. I was like, really? Do you consider Tig Notaro live? Do you consider that stand up? Because that's a half an hour about her discovering she has cancer.
Right.
People consider that stand up.
By the way,
is.
She hadn't worked that shit out either.
Brand new. Let's release that for $50,000. But my favorite joke was that straight white men are now a category, a subcategory.
Yeah.
And they're all mad about it. And you're like, well, you create. No, we're human neutral. That was the punchline.
Yeah,
that I liked.
She did it
better than that. But it was like, we're human neutral. We're not a subcategory. It's like, you made the rules.
Yeah.
You don't get to say you're not a subcategory. Now you are.
I don't remember a single line right off the top of my head. Right. But there's so many little lines that felt like they lanced a boil I didn't know I had. And it felt good. I was like, oh my God, I had no idea my back was full of these little tiny boils and they've been lanced. Now I'm
it's a
all...
horrible image, by the way. That's super oozy. Too oozy for Jackie.
But yeah, I mean, because when I was reading the reviews, I was getting very sort of like, what do you mean she dismantled stand-up comedy? And then I look at the reviews. It's like, I feel like some of these reviewers never see stand-up comedy.
Right,
they're like, wait a minute, a woman had a special. Women do stand-up. Oh my God, you've got to see it.
Right.
And she's gay. Is this the first gay female you've seen do stand-up? That's what I get the feeling for some of these people that are reviewing for you know, national publications. They're not out every night. They're definitely not used to seeing female comics be really truthful on stage, which we are. While it's not at maybe Hannah's level or what she's doing, We are used to seeing it all the time here.
Yeah.
You know, in LA and New York.
Every comic of the week. Almost every comic of the week, unless they're super one-linery.
Yeah.
Or hyper absurd.
There's truth in one-liners, motherfuckers. But that's,
I know.
All right, we'll get to that later.
Right. Okay. We'll get to that one. But the so I mean, when I was just literally just trying to think, like, and it's the same bastards, by the way. I mean, you're talking about the mainstream who don't know that they've never seen this, right?
Right.
What about, what I'm getting is I'm getting a lot of hipster comments.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's more like a one-person show. It's more like a solo show. And I'm like, I took my one-woman show and turned it into stand-up after I did Salesman and Thieves.
Mm.
That was a lot of the dad stuff.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. She is a lot younger than I am, and she is a lot newer than
me. Now, that hurts.
That does hurt.
Let's keep going.
That does hurt. But she's a lot newer than we are, and so she essentially took that solo show, which my Salesman and Thieves was funny, but they took that solo show and didn't spend a year and a half turning it into stand-up by tightening it up.
Right.
Just instead just went directly to stage with it at the Sydney Opera House. It doesn't mean that it wasn't funny in stand-up, because
she kept coming back to jokes. She didn't all of a sudden go off a cliff and start, you know, getting super serious. Like, she kept going back to it. And the thing that was interesting to me was, like, I felt like, okay, who the fuck knows what it's like to grow up in Tasmania? It sounds like a nightmare. And it sounds like Mississippi in 1921 or something. Just awful, okay? And she didn't get into, so she leaves that up to the imagination with, you know, her family didn't seem as like the worst family of a gay person, but not the best. Right.
That bit about her mom, the reason why her mom was upset about it.
Yes. That
was
actually
such
beautiful
a great
line.
Hilarious.
Yes. Yeah, that was great. That doesn't strike me as hilarious. I was just like,
well, it was sort of, well, it was that. And then she tagged it.
Yes.
She tagged it with a bunch of stuff.
So right then, and she's had what she talked about in the special, sexual abuse as a child, which usually that repeats. That's not a one-time thing. Mm-hmm. Often family member close to the family. So that's one living nightmare. Second one is a rape by two guys.
Yeah.
It's a separate assault. That's a nightmare.
And by the way, throwaway line.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah,
throwaway
that wasn't
line
even the bad
one. She was raped by two men in her 20s.
Yeah.
Fucking throwaway line. She has balls the size of Gibraltar. She's awesome.
Yes. And then the one that she really kind of built a special around was a guy beats shit out of her.
Oh, right. Right. That's what she opened with.
And, yeah. So she goes and she
talks. Spoiler alert, by the way, guys.
Yeah.
And again, I don't want anyone to watch Horcrux with a fucking pen in their hand. fuck off. Because she also talked about that, how she didn't want advice or opinions.
Oh, yeah, right.
Right. A lot of women will give her advice and a lot of guys will give her opinions.
Yeah.
And we're not doing either of that.
Yeah.
We're literally just talking about the set, which she may also, if she ever listened to the show, would not want to hear.
Sure, yeah.
But
I wouldn't want to hear a single person talk about my act. In fact, if anyone compliments me, let me know ahead of time so I can not participate. so she talks about this assault, and she had a joke about that assault that was in no way like the act. I mean, there's no way you can't do it. Like if you're you're attacked like that, you can't. There's no way to make that into just punchlines that reflect the horror of that attack.
Right.
Right. That's why there's not a lot of comics that did comedy about being in the trenches in World War One. Like there's stand-up comedy can't do everything, right?
It can't, not yet. One day. We don't know.
I mean, the whole point of it to me is you have to get laughs at a pretty, you know, quick pace in stand-up, right?
That is one way of doing it. Yes.
Right. That's mostly what people expect when they go to see stand-up comedy is to laugh, right?
It's true.
So there's going to be times when a story, it's not going to take you down a laugh path. And maybe the recovery from it is it's not a huge laugh. It's like a tension. Anyway, she had a chunk of material about an attack that ended funny, mm-hmm. but it was not remotely true about the attack, right? And so she decided, I'm going to tell you what really happened.
She told the first half of it.
She told the backstory. She told the backstory of a chunk that she'd been doing for a while, apparently.
Right.
Right? And the backstory is horrible.
Yep.
It's horrifying. And then she also did this amazing, she has an art history degree, and she talked about,
that was
like a totally separate thing that was like, great. That's great stand-up and great commentary and everything.
Coming from such an interesting fucking angle.
Yeah. Yes,
that
yes,
art
yes.
history degree, the fact that it comes up, it's got to be 11 minutes all together. She peppers in all this information about these different artists, calls back to it, goes weeds off, and then comes back.
It's callbacks. It's funny because she talks about callbacks when, you know, it's a comforting laugh because you're all in on the joke. And I read reviews going, she even, you know, like callbacks are, talk about the laziness of stand-up and the callbacks. It's like, she fucking ended on a callback.
Yeah. She's, the thing is she at no time talks about the laziness of any of this shit.
Yes.
She talks about sort of a lot of tropes and hacky stuff, but she doesn't ever call it hacky. And she just is slightly exhausted by some of the things that are happening, but she doesn't call it out by name. Like, she'll say, this joke has really been covered.
About lesbians not laughing at stuff.
Lesbians not laughing, women not being funny. She peppers it with that, but she sighs a little bit. We get the impression that she is exhausted by those fucking jokes.
That's what
she doesn't.
I also think that maybe the comedy scene she came up in was also like all male, and the audiences would only laugh. It's almost like,
I don't know where she's out of, like either Melbourne or Sydney is what I would
think. But if she started in Tasmania?
I doubt she started in Tasmania. She went to art
history. Funny Bone Tasmania, you don't think she does spot there?
I don't think she does the yuck yucks, the tour of Tasmania.
But if you look at Joan River, like I never liked her jokes about herself and being ugly and fat when she was like weighed 20 pounds and stuff. But I also think in her time, that's what mainstream audiences would let a woman joke about. They wouldn't laugh at other stuff.
Right.
Maybe if she trained them, who knows which came first, the chicken or the egg? Who knows which came first, the audience that only laughed at self-deprecating women, or the women who trained the audience to laugh at that stuff? Or the male comics who said...
Or the bookers who only booked women who were self-deprecating.
Who knows? Okay.
Right.
But so it seems like Gadsby was sort of raised in some kind of a comedy scene like that may
have been a comedy scene problem.
But I don't know that's all of Australia's comedy scene.
No, not at all. And because here's the thing, I have done stand-up in Australia.
Here we go again. This
pardon me while I pick this up. I dropped something. And I don't think she's describing anyone's We all came up in that. In that. You didn't come up. You recognized it because that's what you came up in as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, but I also came up in San Francisco.
You saw both things.
I saw the tail end of some female comics that I felt were wedged into that. And then I saw like the newer comics that were like a couple years ahead of me that weren't going to put themselves there or didn't feel an obligation to or didn't feel again in San Francisco.
But you saw
crowds
a lot
were
of shitty male comics too,
right? But I'm saying I think I was as a baby comic, I was raised in a progressive comedy scene as much as you can be.
But the thing is if she came up in Melbourne, and this is also, can you go look up, Kyle, where she started her stand-up, Hannah Gadsby? And because one of the most noticeable things, there were plenty of, I saw some enormously mediocre stand-up in Australia.
Uh-huh.
I also saw a lot of amazing stand-up. And then I saw a lot of stand-up, which was fascinating because comedy in Australia, this is, and I don't know if it's true, I haven't been there in 10 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
12. The, is that they literally were like, nobody's watching. Because we're at the end of the universe here. Nobody's paying attention to us. They have three channels.
Yeah.
To be on TV. And most of the programming is from the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't even think they have that law like Canada does where they have to put 65% of their, has to be homegrown TV.
Right.
But so it was some of the most fascinating stand-up comedy because it was so fucking weird.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because they didn't know what, they were like, well, nobody's watching. I'm just going to stand on one foot and play the ukulele and wear a weird hat and then talk about how my Aunt Helen is a racist. And you're like, is that what you're going to do?
That sounds awful, by the way. And I hope that person has dropped the ukulele.
Well,
keep the Aunt Helen stuff.
And the foot. Excellent. And the hat. But it was fascinating. But what I was going to say is that the hipsters, did you find out? Just in general,
just generic.
She went to Australia for college, and it seems like somewhere in that 2003-2004 range.
Where in Australia?
I mean, her Wikipedia stage does not break down her.
It does not give you a city at all.
No, wherever,
like where she,
like wherever,
like Melbourne, Sydney.
She went to.
Those are the only two cities we know, by the way.
National,
Perth, Brisbane,
Canberra,
Cairns.
The college she went to was.
Oh, she went to Canberra. Okay.
She went to Australia.
Which is in Canberra, which is the capital
of
Australia.
Oh, okay.
And
it
so,
is? Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So that's, I mean, it should be a relatively, it's a small scene probably, but super like weirdly political. I bet you it was. Yeah, it'd be like it's like Aparna and Aaron Jackson both started in D.C.,
mm-hmm.
which wasn't like a hugely big comedy scene.
Right.
But it brought those two people out of it,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you're like, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I don't know what to say about that information, but because I would have bet it was Melbourne. What I was going to say is that the hipsters who were complaining about...
on your Facebook page or something?
No, I just... comics, I hang out with other comedians.
Okay.
Sometimes. and there was a lot of chitter chat about how it was too emotional. Nobody said that, but that's what they meant, right? Is that it was far too, like, there was less, like a sad sack part of it where she tells us too much info about her horror, you know, the horrors that have happened.
Right.
And that wasn't stand-up. They're the same hipsters, though, who bitch about Kevin Hart, who don't like his stand-up.
First of all, no comic likes to hear that another comic raised the bar.
I guess.
Right? We want to hear that we raised the bar.
Right.
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 We don't want to hear somebody. What do you mean? I've never even heard of her. Right. How did she raise the bar? I don't know who she is.
You know that big text thing that we had? And
yes.
Then because John Lovitz, and he didn't, I genuinely don't believe he meant it mean.
Yeah.
I think he meant it, so this can be anything.
Mm-hmm.
Maria Bamford did one of those improv and friends shows.
Yeah.
It was a weekend show that Jamie Flynn was running for a couple of years where you got to pick the other four comics.
Right, right.
And you could either host it or headline it and whatever. So I was doing one of those Maria Bamford and friends shows at the Improv. John Lovitz was in the audience. He had come to see the show.
Mm.
He sat through the show. Maria comes up to me after the show and says, John Lovitz just came up to me and said, do you consider what you're doing stand-up comedy? And she said, well, it's a comedy club. Yes. And left it at that.
What did he say?
He just was like, okay. Like, I don't think he meant it.
Yeah, I don't think so. It sounds like he was blown away by how different she is.
Right, how different it was. And he might have, because he's not really a stand-up either, right?
I mean,
he was more of a comic actor.
Right.
He wasn't a club guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He owned that weird club at Universal for a heartbeat.
Yes.
That used to be
where you had to park in the dinosaur sections. Yeah. Like a pterodactyl or something. And then it's like $25 to park, but you got to validate it or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's her show was it was a lot of things, you know?
Yeah. It really, and it was 70 minutes.
Was it? I thought it was just an hour.
No, it was 70 minutes, and there was probably maybe two and a half minutes of credits.
Yeah.
Front and back.
I know, I count every minute.
Well, I wish I had my piece of paper, because I was taking notes, and I had written down a bunch of things about how, like, some of the stuff, that art history thing blew me away.
Yeah, that was
the
pronunciation of Vincent Van Gogh blew me away. What? That's the most important thing to talk about. How do they pronounce that in Australia?
Well,
and
at one point, she's gotten emotional, right?
Right.
You can hear it in her voice. You can even see sort of a sheen of tears on her face. And that had to make every asshole in the world uncomfortable, right? I mean, that's where people are like, well, that's not stand-up. Except for the fact that she's doing something. First of all, you're right. The material, I bet you, is relatively new. It's probably a year. She's been working on it for a year. She accidentally named it after a girlfriend that she broke up with.
Right, right.
Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And so she's been working on it a year. She doesn't have that disconnect that you get from a bit if you've done it 100 times.
Interesting.
So she's still emotionally in that bit.
Right, right, right.
And I read this amazing comic book, quite honestly. I weed off. But his name's Kyle Baker. Wrote, mm-hmm. and it was based on a true story about a guy who got recruited into the army. And he had almost almost profound autism. It wasn't profound autism, but it was a serious case of autism. And it was up in Oregon. Mm-hmm. And the recruiter needed to fill his quota. And so it was based on that guy. Loosely, like, because they got him out, but
Jesus, but
the comic book followed through what that might have looked like, and it was very funny.
Interesting.
Anyway, but it was about like sort of a special forces team, and there was a woman in it, and in the army in 2005 or 2006 they started letting women drive the MRAPs in combat. They couldn't fight, they were not to firefight. They were just the fucking drivers. Well, that sounds even more dangerous.
Right.
Anyway,
you can't defend yourself.
Right. So Special Forces, I think it's just one volume. It's just 6 issues. And everybody gets killed except for this woman, the driver, and Zone, who is the autistic guy. And Zone has a list that the Sarge is like, put a list together every day of what you should do. And one of the things on his list was that he was supposed to take over this tent, this nest of bad guys, right?
Okay.
And anyway, so they're in the firefight, and the woman who's in the comic, who's the driver, is they're all hunkered down, they're all about to be kind of killed.
Mm-hmm.
And she's sort of half crying.
Right.
And the other soldier, not Zoned, says, "You're fucking crying in a firefight? That's why women shouldn't be in firefights, is because you fucking cry." And she goes, "It's just nerves, asshole. You show it differently."
Hey, Meg Ryan almost had that same exact scene in... Yes, yeah, yeah. I remember that. Yeah,
okay.
She's just saying it's just tension or something like that.
Yeah, it's just tension,
right.
Which I would not be surprised if they stole that from Kyle Baker. Or he wrote part, because he's such a great writer.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's a common experience. One of those three things is happening.
That women cry and men accuse them of being weak, and women say no.
Yes,
I think that's common.
That might be a human experience.
Yes.
I'm so sorry. No, Kyle Baker's the best.
So this relates to
her almost tearing up in that moment.
Right, right.
The bit's too new.
Yeah.
For her not to be separated from it.
The Carnegie Hall of Australia.
Of Australia.
Too.
Right.
And all these people. It's huge.
And
they have a couple shots from the back of the room. It's fucking ginormous.
Right. And she's opening a vein
in
front of what? 3,000 people?
Mm-hmm.
3,500 people? And so, yeah. So, that part, Like, I got my, the hair went up on my arms a couple of times. And I,
although,
it was great.
Yeah, it was great. I personally don't, it like, I don't expect stand up to, I feel like you can acknowledge its limits and do other stuff. Like I feel like my book was a way to do different stuff with the same feelings as opposed for stand up, right?
Okay.
With grief. Like, I, you know, I don't know. Like, is it, that's not a set you could do for a Friday Night Late Show. And maybe in my head, I'm trained that women aren't funny. So I'm like, fuck you. I will fucking murder on the hardest shows where people are throwing things at you, where the waitress is interrupting a setup, where you're getting a check drop on punchlines. I will fucking murder anyway because I've been told I can't.
Right. You've been sold a bill of goods and you will fight against that.
Right. So maybe I'm just stuck in that position. Maybe I'm that's the age I came up in, and maybe I'm stuck there. And maybe
Hannah and
her generation, though, are like, I want a different audience. I want an audience who listens and I don't have to fight to listen. I mean, I do too, but part of me is like, whenever I write a joke, I'm not allowing for 5 minutes of tears or trauma in the joke. I don't have time for that because I assume that people are going to start peeling off if I have even three sentences of pipe with no sort of twist or no evidence that I'm headed towards a punchline. You know,
yeah. See, that's very much an old school attitude. Remember when we came up?
That's not necessarily bad, though.
No, it's not bad.
Right.
And if that's how you write stand up,
yes,
to some extent, you win. You win, like, the road work. You win.
Oh my God, this might be the cruelest rant you've ever gone on. Please tell me more things I win. One nighters? Can I do one nighters?
In
Montana.
Friday night, you could do a triple run in front of 11 career drunks sitting at the bar.
Unlike those losers with their hours on Netflix.
I didn't realize that what a winner I was.
Wow. What I like is that you took this so personal when I'm talking about how we came up. And if that's how you... No, I genuinely believe, though, that that is a winning hand. That if you write that kind of material, you will always work.
Mm-hmm.
But that is true. I was told that from the very beginning, that if you consistently make a room full of people laugh, there will always be work for you. Whether that... And speaking of Netflix, I'm surprised they even bought this fucking thing. I mean, this is not the thing that they buy. They don't buy Tig Notaro's thing. They didn't buy...
Cameron Esposito's
rape thing.
You mean they didn't
buy
Tig Notaro's thing?
Well, like her live or live.
Like, oh, that was DVD Netflix.
Right. That was 5 years ago, too. It was, but I mean, that's not their go-to. They want something that's shinier, right?
Kyle is moving.
I feel like they're kind of looking for things like that. This seemed kind of like for them.
What else?
I think this is the direction they're going. Because I feel like they kind of got.
Oh, this is the first.
Everybody got burnt on just seeing kind of the same special over and over.
Right.
So to me, this seemed like kind of an obvious, like, here's something.
Well, they're definitely going for, like, whatever. I mean, I was told.
I wish my dad had died 4 years later.
Exactly. Thank God. Thank God.
That's the only reason why, though.
Well, how am I the dark one of this duo? And but I was told that I literally was told that I needed some sort of freak show to sell it to Netflix when I did Horcrux.
Well, let me ask.
And I didn't have anything.
But is that what women have to do? I see some male
very
comics
straight up.
They're very straight. They're funny, but it's joke and it's guitar or whatever it is, but it's not groundbreaking. Do women have to break ground? You have to be fucking 7 months pregnant or confess to or talk about a trauma to get a fucking hour on Netflix if you're female?
I think you just defined it. Yeah, that might have been. Because I mean, there's just dudes get introduced, they go on stage, they do their hour, they get off stage. There might be a little meet and greet before.
The one take thing.
The which one?
The Tony Hinchcliffe's thing is all in one take.
I.
It's a whole conceit where it's like all one shot.
Yeah.
Like Brett Morin's thing was like one big narrative. I definitely agree that you have to jump through way more hoops, but they do love just a gimmicky special.
But there are more. If you look at it, at what's not a gimmick, what's just straight stand up with
John
three cameras,
Jim Gaffigan.
Well, those guys are. I'm talking. You know, there's just like a lot more white males that just have pure stand up on there versus the women have to have something that makes Emily Nussbaum write an article about you in the New Yorker. You know what I mean?
Right.
I don't know.
Well, I completely agree, and we've had this conversation before, and we'll have it again.
Yes.
Which about the slight amount of fury that simmers. It simmers underneath, where I'm just like,
I don't think it's simmer. I think it's boiling now.
Well, it comes out only when encouraged. And you have so encouraged. And so I say, yes, it is infuriating that you're like, well, I, like... When I think, because your dad could have died 4 years later, my Horcrux album, literally, I put my heart and soul into that damn thing. And a lot of people think Hero's better and even more sort of weirdly heartfelt, which that's what you want to hear when you go to see a comic. She's heartfelt. Oh, fuck that. And I want it to be fixed.
Mm-hmm.
I want it to be a merit-based system, but it isn't.
Yeah.
And it's never been a merit-based system. And I don't think it's ever going to be a merit-based system.
It won't.
But
guess what? I'm allowed to be frustrated by that because
yes.
I'm on the other side of it.
Yes. Yes. And
we should totally talk about this in Montreal with the hope that there are Netflix executives in the audience.
We will.
If we're not going to get one, we might as well not get one big.
Let's not get one big. Yeah, we're not going to stick this on our Patreon page. We're going to put this out in the free, not behind a paywall. We're talking about a Patreon page, you guys. We don't know. We don't know if it'll happen.
Maybe.
Sure, it could
happen.
Here's
what we'd have to be, enough people would have to sign up for it to make it, because this is already hard to schedule, you know?
Yeah.
We barely get out an hour a week.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So for us to
and
do
when
an
we have
extra,
to do two,
an
right.
extra pod or something, a month or something, if it's got to be enough people would sign up for it that would be interested in something behind a paywall.
Right. Right. So it would have to, and it
we'll
would be.
We'll figure it out. But
we'll figure it out. Well, you feel free to email me, Jackie@JackieCation.com, and tell me what might be an incentive for you to pay a monthly whatever.
Yeah.
Besides just the dream of throwing some money at us. I wanted to tell you that I was, I'm super happy for you and slightly jealous.
Why?
That you have got to do so many sets this week and next week. Last week, you did Bloomington.
Yes.
And you're going to Acme.
Yes.
And you got long sets. You got at least, 10?
Ten long sets? 4 in Bloomington and I have 5 in Acme.
9 long sets.
Yeah.
I need long sets like crazy.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And so you got 2 weeks of awesome headline work.
Right.
At great clubs.
Here's what I did. So I was flying. First of all, I did a ton of spots in New York, right? I wasn't able to completely make up for the amount I get when the stand is open, you
right.
know, because they totally load me up. But enough. I was like, I'm good. I got, on the weeknights, I had at least 2 a night. And
good.
on Saturday, I had like 7.
Oh, I was fucking exhausted.
Oh, so I fly in. These overnight flights are getting harder and harder on me. I'm getting less and less able to do it.
I don't know how you could do it at all.
So I get in, you know, 7 in the morning. I go to my apartment. I fall asleep. I wake up around 3. And my first spot starts at 6:10 at night. You know, obviously at night. 6:10, that's the first one. The last one is at 1:45 in the morning. I'm basically doing 1 an hour for 8 hours, 7 or 8 hours. I was wiped out.
What clubs?
What? Stand up, New York Comedy Club, Gotham, and Greenwich Village Comedy Club.
Okay.
So it's all over the place.
All over the place.
And right before the Gotham one, I'm like, I can't talk anymore. I'm so tired.
Yeah.
I might faint. And then I'm like, the only time I've ever fainted on stage was at Gotham. I'm like, I can't.
You can't bail at
I
Gotham.
I can't faint at Gotham.
Yeah, yeah.
You need to have a club you can faint at, right?
Right.
And I burned that Gotham bridge.
You got to burn a different club.
But sometimes you're ever so tired where you have a good set because all your defenses are down and something else is happening and
yeah,
you're
yeah.
like, what's happening to me? I'm connecting with this crowd and it's and on a different, like, I'm not in, like, I'm a control freak, but I'm less in control because the control part of me is just
it's
asleep.
Exhausted. Yeah. Yeah. You're like, I guess we're just going to loosely go through this
some
set.
Other organism in me that's like probably actually running thing. Oh, you recorded them all. So I flew on Thursday to, no, excuse me, Friday to Bloomington.
Yeah.
And it was on a little tiny plane out of LaGuardia. It was American and no Wi-Fi. So what I did, which is something I've been wanting to do but never had time because I have to tweet, Jackie.
Right. Why wouldn't there be Wi-Fi?
I make a lot of money from that. So I took these two chunks that I'm working on and I wrote them out. So I wrote each sentence had a lot was I wrote out a sentence and I put some space, like two spaces, you know, return, and then another sentence. So,
oh, you had your laptop.
Yeah. And I was just sort of, when you put like white space between sentences, you can actually see space in the joke where things could be changing. Mm-hmm. You know, and I noticed when I work on monologue jokes, you know, when I,
if you do line breaks and stuff, it helps to see.
Yeah, or sometimes, you know, if I write it by hand and then there's just space, there's physical space on a page around a line.
Yeah.
It's like words bubble up like in that Russell Crowe movie, you know, A Brilliant Mind, whatever. Beautiful Mind, right. Like there's actual words will actually pop up out of the page, right? So there's this one joke. This does not happen. It's this joke. Me. That joke that has been my nemesis.
Right, right. You've been working on that for like 6 weeks.
Way longer than that.
Okay. Well.
Way longer than
that. Okay, yeah.
Okay, so like a year. So it was like a B plus joke, like a B joke for about a year. And I'm like, all right, it just, you know, it sets something else up.
Right, it's setting something else up.
It's, you know, cannon fodder, right? And then I wrote it out and I was like, wait a minute. I've been taking it in this thinking I have to follow a certain chain of command in the thinking. And I'm like, I don't. I could flip this up instead of going down where it leads to lots of death.
Yeah. Right? It leads to so much death.
It leads to lots of things dying.
Too much
death.
But
I'm like, wait. Why do they have to die? Just because I said the guy died in the first part, all the 11 uncles have to die. Yeah. No, they don't.
Nope.
They can be alive.
They could have 11 other things could happen to them.
Yes. Yeah, so
it could be 11 different jokes.
So now, well, it won't be, but
you don't do list comedy. I sometimes love list comedy, quite honestly.
So then I go, okay, so let me just, instead of, because there's this, the joke is like my son's disappointed because someone dies, right? Yeah. And then it's been like, and even worse, and then 11 more things happen and they all die. And it gets like one of those ooh laughs where people that like mean comedy love it.
Yeah.
And people that don't like to see children devastated go, aw. I've always hated that laugh.
Oh,
and I was always trying to turn it around. And I'm like,
Rich, you don't have to hear it.
What if they don't die? And the other half of that joke, which is that I'm having whatever, that's more about me. What if that's the one that comes to the forefront?
Oh yeah.
And I was in my head for like three of the four shows going, I got to get this wording down. Right. And headline, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd rather have had like 20 one-minute spots.
No.
Just to do, I'm like, can we do Chappelle where I could just keep doing this joke over and over
right,
again?
Right, right, right.
And so finally on the Saturday show, like I got, there was, then within that decision to take it to a positive place instead of a negative place, then there's decisions to make inside that, right?
Yep.
And so by the Saturday show, I come up with how I was going to do it pretty much. And
that
it worked.
So cool.
And I'm like, oh, now that it works, now I can really act it out a bit and be stupid in it, which is like, that's, then you're like,
then that opens it up enormously.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then the other, that was because I didn't have Wi-Fi on the plane.
Yeah. That's so
and
great.
And then I did that with this other longer chunk
that I felt like I ruined and I'm trying to get back. And I'm like, okay, I think I got it back now. And then I was going to do it at the gala. And then Colleen's like, oh, you can't say rapist. So I go, well,
I don't know if you know this, you're in Canada. There's no rape in
I know.
Canada.
It's so, that's why it's amazing. So great.
It's so great
but,
there.
But I can't use another word because the whole point is that yeah. I shouldn't be saying that. Yeah, so yeah. It's, so I'm like, I won't do that one. I'll find some other stuff. I have some stuff about killing my mother. I'm sure it'll be fine. But so that was like, that felt really good. And then I thought if I could just do that, like with every chunk. But then it becomes overwhelming and I'll never do it again. But if I just go, what about this one joke? Let me just write it out how I say it now and put space in between each sentence and just look at it and see what am I missing? Sometimes that space tells you what you're overlooking, not missing, overlooking.
Yep.
I'm so married to this narrative of this joke. What am I missing with it?
It's almost like you're leaving space in the joke for more ideas by writing it out like that.
Yes. It's actually, and it actually visually works. It does help.
And it works. That's amazing.
Yeah.
I have been beating myself up because I don't have enough long sets in my life.
Right.
That I did Albuquerque with Bamford over the weekend.
Right.
And I decided that I'm not going to, I'm like, just work on the 20. Work on the 20 and don't sweat putting in like a closer. And then I, of course, did anyway. But going in with the attitude that I'm not going to sweat.
Yeah.
Trying to work on the three different 12-minute chunks that I have.
Oh, that's too much to juggle.
It's too like much to juggle. Work on the one 12-minute chunk, which is actually a 16-minute chunk.
Yeah, it could get longer.
And then, and then you can throw in the other two bits, one that sells shit and one that is the closer.
Yeah.
And then you're fine. So, you know,
Dismount and make money.
Right, dismount.
Go to your merch table.
Do the tantric sex joke at the end of it.
Yes.
Do the spooky reading girl at the beginning of it. And I've sold some spooky reading girl stuff. And yes. And then work on the 12 to 15 minute white lady thing. I have, I was
a Jackie Cation white lady at the
airport. My God. You were a meat shield.
Yes.
So hardcore.
Mm-hmm.
We'll come back to wait, it's 30, right?
It's 41.
What? Okay.
Holy shit. We haven't.
Joy on both of your faces.
This is all because of Hannah Gadsby. She's changing our podcast.
Wait, she's changing lives, you guys. She's changing comedy. Let's do our comic of the week, though.
Yes.
It's Dulce.
Dulce Sloan.
Dulce Sloan. What's her?
At Dulce Sloan.
It's what you got to love about Dulce is that it comes from such a sane place, and it's so honest and sane. Yes. It's hilarious.
And she's also, she's a correspondent on The Daily Show.
Okay, the new
and,
with,
yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
When I say new, 2 years, five
no,
years.
No, I think, well, it's Trevor's new, but I think she started maybe last fall. You
okay.
Know? And she's really great, you know? And
she's so great.
Yeah.
I loved her Conan set. And
Yeah, she murdered.
Yeah, and then I think we...
It's also, I think...
I just worked with her at some
festival.
When you
start doing like that kind of a job, it seems like... You know, it takes it's like that you're finding your rhythm and you're working, anytime you're jumping onto a show that's already in progress, established, you know, it takes a while to like feel like, hey, I own this, you
right.
know?
I'm in this with these guys.
And she's like been really killing it on her segments.
Oh,
recently.
That's awesome.
So
I just love.
Check her out on The Daily Show.
And check out her stand up because it's always, I like it because it comes from this place that it is smart and it's the only word I can think of is sane, which doesn't make any sense. Once you just watch it and make your own goddamn opinion.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so what I was going to say about my, before we get into the airport thing, is that my Chinese population joke was doing some writing with Maria and decided to make it more about me.
Mm-hmm.
Who doesn't want to make it more about themselves?
Why'd you get up there? You didn't get up there to talk about the Chinese population.
Yeah,
you didn't go through all this shit for that.
So that I could give a history lesson on the population crisis of the world. Well, that's true. So let's make it personal. So it's kind of great. It's got a new. I love it when there's a new angle, a new place to dig, essentially.
Yeah.
Now you're at the airport.
Okay, so I get off the plane at LAX, and by the way, I'm totally ready for this. You know, because there's situations where, like, when I was walking to the Comedy Attic from the hotel they keep us in.
Yep.
And cops had surrounded a car and they were talking to the guy. And I was like, all right, if the guy in the car is black, I'm going to film.
Yeah.
Right. But I was still like, you know, because it's police. They can walk up to you, knock the phone out of your hand. And it's like,
Do whatever you want.
I have two shows.
Yeah.
However, the guy inside was white. So I was like, all right.
Yeah,
fine.
It's going to be fine. They're not going to.
So then LA, I get off the plane. I'm waiting at the Uber Lyft area
at LAX.
At LAX, and I hear this crash behind me, like things have bumped into each other. A white guy who I know it could take in a fight. First, let me just say, I felt totally comfortable yelling at this guy because he looked like a guy, like a Miami, just very tanned, wearing, I took a picture. Did I show you his picture?
Oh, I did see his picture.
I did?
Yeah. Put it on the text
message. Oh, that's right. Okay. So just, you know, a guy I felt comfortable yelling at.
Yeah.
Now there's some guys I wouldn't feel comfortable yelling at, or I'd be like, that guy might be armed, or this guy might, you know, if someone is like,
you're also at an airport, so he's probably not armed.
Yes. There's a ton of security. So it's not like I'm not walking up in front of some guy who's got face tattoos and telling him to be kinder. Right. You know what I mean? So
I believe you could. What did he do?
So he deliberately crashes into this middle-aged Hispanic woman. It's late. She's working the Sunday night shift. In my opinion,
she has a broom and one of those.
She's got a cart where she's cleaning things, right? Okay. She's fucking sweeping around our piggy feet, you know, trying to keep it clean
because
we can't find the garbage cans, right? Okay. Because we're pigs, right? So she's doing this, and it's got to be minimum wage, and she's working the night shift. It's like 9 o'clock.
Okay. On a Sunday.
Nobody does this shit. Yeah. Unless they have kids. All right.
Yeah.
If you're a woman, you're not going to take that shift unless you've got kids to take care of. Right?
Right.
You got a family. All right. So this is, to me, that's what's happening there. So
you turn around.
So I turn around, I hear this clank, and he starts complaining about how she's sweeping, and she just looks petrified, you know, and just is like, no, 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 no. And so I'm like, shut the fuck up. I immediately took her side. And I go, no, no, no. I go, she's at work. You leave her alone.
Good for you.
And then other people also started just saying, hey, dude, just calm down. And he starts yelling about how she was upstairs sweeping and she swept something onto somebody's head
below.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't know what this means, but this is not how you take care of it. You don't crash your suitcase into her cart to get her attention.
Yeah.
And she's scared.
Yeah.
Because she's at her job.
Right. And she would just like to not be part of whatever's happening.
Not get fired. Or maybe she's undocumented. Or maybe she's not. But who doesn't? ICE can still pick you up and hold you for 2 weeks before they decide you're okay.
Yeah.
Right? I don't remember the exact order. So then another guy from LAX comes over.
Another worker dude?
Yeah. So he sort of starts talking to the guy, and he's being more nice. And the guy takes out his phone, and he's like, I'm taking a picture of her. So I stood in front of the phone. I go, no, you're not. I kept saying, you leave her alone. She's at work.
Yeah.
You know? And so...
Amen.
So then she...
Just in general.
between that and he's telling me to shut the fuck up, and I'm telling him to shut the fuck up. And it's like that.
There's super mature. But yeah. I've been there. I think he was
surprised to be yelled at by a woman.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so that threw him off his game a little bit. Right? Yep. And so then I guess she rolled the other way. So she's leaving and he's still telling people to shut the fuck up. And I took his picture, and then he went away, and that was it.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Good for you. I used to babysit, used to do a lot of childcare when I first moved here to Los Angeles.
Right.
And I babysat for a couple of tiny LA babies, and they were lovely.
Yeah.
Except for that they were enormously, they were pretty entitled. And I remember the first time we went out, well, not the first, but whatever, we were at some... There used to be a Disney camp kind of thing where you could, it was like a Chuck E. Cheese, but you'd go and it was Disney and there were balls to jump through if you're little, and you could go in the ball thing and you could throw skee ball. And then there was a whatever. There was like a theater-like moment where you could put on costumes and dress up like a princess or a Robin Hood. And it's gone now. It was a really good idea, quite honestly. And for kids. And I remember the older kid was like just bossing this like 18-year-old who was working at the Disney thing. And I said, she's at work. This is a lifelong message that I'm going to give you here. This is a life lesson,
yeah.
Which is that when you are not at work and you are nine, and someone else is at work, they win. You have to be more patient because you're not at work.
Yeah,
it's
I mean,
a pain in the ass
people,
going to work.
When you're at work, you're trying to keep your job, basically. Do your job, keep your job. So you can't even respond like you, I mean.
Like a person.
Like a normal person.
Yeah.
You have to sit there and take it. It's awful.
And I'm not saying that there's never an occasion for that, obviously.
Right.
Hashtag not all men, you guys.
But this guy, whatever he was complaining about happened someplace else in the airport. No one was there to witness it. And that's not how you handle it.
Nope.
If you actually have a problem with how she sweeps.
Yeah.
You fucking make a complaint. You don't crash into her cart.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's insane.
Yeah.
That's completely nuts. Were you this... Wait, you're going off to Acme. Do you have any idea who you're working with?
I don't.
But this will go up.
This will go up the day my son has his ACL surgery.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I just saw him and I was like, when's this going to be over?
He says, been on crutches
for so long. Yeah, he's good at it.
Shitty summer, man.
It's a hard summer, but you got a water bike.
I got a water bike. I had a female task rabbiter come in and put it together.
And
she was great.
It up. Sure.
And then we have new stickers.
Right. I got stickers made. And then I accidentally got stickers, the small square ones. They also came in the mail like 2 days later. And I was like, hey, I didn't. And so I got the bigger ones from Sticker Mule. And I got the little ones from Sticker Guy.
What do I owe you for that?
It'll be, yeah, the bigger ones were actually expensive.
Let
so
me know.
It
okay.
was, I got 2,000 stickers. Mm-hmm. And they all together were something like $600. So
this were 600?
Yeah.
For the stickers?
Yeah.
Wow.
Hey guys, why don't you send me $600? What? That seems just one person.
So wait, they cost.
it's a weird thing to say of somebody.
Wait,
hey, if anybody has an extra $600,
you got 2,000 stickers.
Yeah, so they're 30 cents each.
So they're okay.
They end up being
okay.
Yeah. So, but the bigger ones, the ones with our faces,
yeah,
those are like 46 cents each. So, like, I posted a picture of it, and people were like, "How can I get that?" And I said, "PayPal me or Venmo me $1." And then I did the math. And the stamp is 50 cents. The sticker is 50 cents. And I'm like, so my time is worth jack. So I changed the post. I went, $2. Send me $2. I will send you two stickers. Because then I'm making 50 cents a sticker.
Right.
For my time.
Still not worth it.
Still not worth it. But if you come and see us live, because I gave you some for Acme.
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah. That'll be fun for you.
Give some away while I'm hopefully
right, because you're going to sell some books, right?
I didn't sell a lot of books in Bloomington.
Well, it's a weird space because you up and down those staircases, there's not a place to sell, really. They do an okay job, like if it's one show night.
Yeah.
Or if it's the weather's okay and you can stand outside at the base.
I should have done that. We had the local Democratic Party came on the Friday night shows. I don't think showed up for Saturday. But
did they register?
Bloomington's a highly registered city, apparently.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to Bridgeport and Portland, Maine this weekend. And I tweeted at the League of Women Voters to see if anybody...
Oh, that's a good idea. I'll see if they can do that at Minneapolis.
Yeah, and Helen, because the first time I ever registered to vote was at a Billy Bragg concert.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, or in Minneapolis anyway, the Minnesota.
Cool.
And
Helen Hong?
Helen Hong does it herself. Like, sits with people.
Wow.
And so
great.
I tweeted it to Bridgeport, and I said, well, I'm going to get there on Thursday night. All Friday, I have the day open. If anyone needs help figuring out how to register to vote, I will go to a coffee shop and sit there, and I can meet people all day long if they want.
If anyone wants to have coffee with me to vote, I will block you and make sure you never see me.
Oh my God, both my brother and sister now are like, does Lori have a place to swim when she comes to Minneapolis?
Oh my God, the pool at Bloomington?
Yeah.
I think maybe I've been there when it was open before. It's called Indiana University Outdoor Pool. Which
okay.
Is very
so
very,
not the pool at the hotel?
No.
Is that ever a thing?
No, it's not.
You barely use the one in your home.
No, I don't. I know. I like to look at the water. I didn't put it in. It was there.
No, I know you didn't. If you would have put it in, you would have put in like one of those infinity lap pools.
Yeah. But I do like swimming in a pool with other people. I like the urine, nice. Et cetera. But this is, oh my God. It's an outdoor, it's called outdoor pool, which is very... The Midwestern creativity.
Yeah.
Other pool. Things are the Heckscher Aquatic Center and Indiana University. It's called Outdoor Pool. And that's outdoor the pool. Name it's written. Okay.
Somebody made a sign and everything.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I go to Outdoor Pool and it's like from my childhood. The pool boys are these styrofoam cylinders that are probably from 1970 because they've been many thighs have
the
been
the word you're saying is buoy, right?
Pull boy. We call them boys. We don't call them buoys. We call them pull boys.
Okay.
You stick them between your legs and then you just pull. Okay.
What do you pull?
You use paddles on your hands and you pull. Okay. So there's several generations.
Oh, you Kyle two, and I just looked at each other and shook it off. Keep going.
I'm sorry for both of you.
We're not so sorry about it at all.
There's like many generations and there's like pull boys have been upgraded.
Okay.
But they had the ones from the 70s that I grew up with. And I was like, what? And then the lane ropes were the same lane ropes of my old swim team and the same colors, red and yellow. And I was like, this is... And the everyone at the pool was white. It was like, sure. This is totally my childhood right here. It's a bunch of moms not using sunscreen, sitting out while their kids are in the pool.
Right.
Like they had lane lines and then they had a swimming area.
Right.
And like a kid area. And
so did you get to do some laps?
I did. And it was so fun. Like I waited till 5 o'clock both nights because it was boiling hot and I thought I was going to pass out. And even still at 5 o'clock, I remember on the first show Saturday, I was like, wow, I was in a lot of sun today.
Yeah.
You know, even I tried to avoid the sun religiously. I try to swim when the sun's not there.
Oh, interesting.
But anyway, it was
you
a
would
great
think it would
pool.
Be nice.
And it was just, it felt like such a throwback to my childhood. It was weird.
That's great. I think we're done.
How much time have we done?
We are at 56.
Damn it. I wanted to end on me not listening to your story, but I was such an asshole about it. I was
you
like...
could end at any time. That's, no, that's your MO.
No, that's. But I that it is cool. I like that stuff.
And then
I'm in town this week. So what next week you're back
I
at
will,
Conan.
Yes, I'll be here. I'll be doing spots
for this week.
And then the week after that I'll be at Comic-Con.
Oh right.
Hopefully my kid will be okay and get through surgery okay. Cuz his apparently the other side of the family did some genealogy tests and my son's grandmother on the other side is 53% Native American.
Oh,
that's
wow.
A gigantic amount.
That's a lot of Native American.
Yes. So what I'm saying is, do you think my son will hire me to work in his casino one day?
No, he could just sit around. Supposedly, allow me to say something very sweeping. No, why don't I not?
please, let's end on a sweeping statement.
A sweeping
that
statement
everybody.
That angers everybody. A couple who lives next to my brother in Minneapolis gets a check from... one of the casinos in Minnesota for $50,000 a month.
Holy!
Because they're in the tribe.
I've got to be so much nicer to my kid.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my God!
Why don't you nicen it up?
All right.
Oh, and I will say this. Did Albuquerque this last weekend, and reframed Albuquerque. I now like Albuquerque again. That was the worst place. That was at Russ Revis.
That's right.
Disgusting. It's been de-revist. Yes, de-revist. I think we're done. What do you think, Kyle?
Yes.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.